You can start a spirited discussion any day of the week by raising the topic of how we talk to each other on the internet. Would we say the kinds of things we say in comment sections and blogs to the faces of the people with whom we disagree? We'll let the question hang, because it's not just opinions and their expressions that cause trouble on the internet. It's also the treatment of facts, or maybe the treatment of things that are not true as facts. Our guest this hour spends a lot of time thinking about the internet and how we use it. Michael Patrick Lynch is the director of the Humanities Institute at the University of Connecticut. He's a philosophy professor there, and he's currently leading UConn's Humility and Conviction in Public Life project. His April TED Talk, How to See Past Your Own Perspective and Find Truth, racked up more than 500,000 views as of yesterday. And he joined us last year to talk about his book, The Internet of Us, Knowing More and Understanding Less in the Age of Big Data. Thank you so much for joining us once again, Michael Patrick Lynch.
Thanks so much for having me.
So when we had you on last year to talk about your book, I mean, how did we get to a place where we have all the information in the world at our fingertips, but we seem to reject vast amounts of it?
Right. Well, I think one problem that's become, I think, particularly salient in the last year to me is the overwhelming personalization of our experience on the internet. I mean, right now, everything from the ads we read to the news that comes down our Facebook feed is really tailored for our unique preferences. And that happens because all our movement online is really tracked by a variety of corporate entities. And we sort of are willing to trade that sort of tracking for the convenience that we get from being able to buy shoes much more quickly. I mean, after all, if you even search a little bit for shoes, suddenly shoe advertisements, and often advertisements for just the sort of shoes that you're interested in, might start popping up on the various sites that you are navigating through. And while that's great for buying shoes, what happens is it's not so great for learning things about matters of import, like scientific or political matters. Because what happens is we tend to get the information through social media, a lot of people do, and through various sites that we happen to visit over and over again, given our political affiliations, so that the news and information we get is already sort of pre-digested for us and packaged in a way that fits or conforms with our biases and prejudices. And so as a result, a lot of the information we're getting, even though we're searching it more and more online for, let's say, political information, we're getting information that inflates our bubbles rather than bursting it.
So where once, for example, reading the newspaper, we would have been presented with things that didn't necessarily cater to our worldview, but at least there were other people's opinions and facts about the world around us. Now it's sort of a narrowing spiral all the time, where we're getting just the things that we have indicated interest in before.
Exactly, and in often ways that we're not even aware of. Think of Google Complete, the helpful Google program, proprietary program that literally finishes your sentences for you when you search online. You type in climate change and Google will supply the ending of your question. It will Google climate change and hoax, or climate change and facts, and those sorts of things. The ways in which Google finishes your sentences is based on your previous activity online and the activity online of people that the algorithms judge are similar to you. And that, again, they're trying to predict what it is you're looking for, and they're very good at it. But what you're looking for is often a result of your worldview and your previous biases, of course. And so, again, we end up getting filtered, pre-digested, pre-packaged information.
So would you recommend, for example, just as a first step, that people either clear their cookies or use the private browser or something, so that their preferences are not necessarily reflected in the ads and the clickbait that they're shown?
Certainly, I would certainly do that if you're trying to figure something out, scientific bit of information or a matter of import to you. I might consider using DuckDuckGo or other such search browsers. But most importantly, I think, because it's really difficult if you have a smartphone to get away from that. It's really difficult. It's much more difficult if you're carrying a smartphone around to get away from this sort of filtering. So I think much more important than any of those activities, although those are important, I underline that, is to actually try to change your mindset a little bit. And that, I think, is harder, but absolutely crucial. We need to start taking responsibility for how we absorb information online. We can look to Google and Facebook to try to mitigate the problem or lessen the problem by redesigning their platforms to lessen polarization. But I think while those efforts are vital and I applaud them, we can't just rely on big corporate entities to solve this problem for us. We need to start taking responsibility as individuals for how we process information.
Michael Patrick Lynch is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a philosophy professor at the University of Connecticut, director of the Humanities Institute there, and the lead at UConn's Humility and Conviction in Public Life Project, which we'll ask about. You can join our conversation on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So when you talk about changing our behaviors, I guess the root question is, have we just changed as a society? Was there a time, Dr. Lynch, when we took our spinach and just accepted that some information would not be tasty to us?
Well, probably to some extent, the right answer would be to say not so much. I think it's important to realize that bias and prejudice and trying to look at the world through your own particular lens, or doing so whether you like to or not, that's a fact about human beings. Human beings are prone to what psychologists call confirmation bias, that is, believing, in a sense, what you want to hear, that is, listening to the voices that already sort of conform with your expectations. But while it's always polarization of the sort that we're in now has always been a problem that afflicts human beings, it can get better or worse. It can become deeper and more profound. And I think one of the things that's happened now is that we're polarized not just over values and not just over even the facts. We're polarized over what we count as a fact and what we count as evidence. And that, when we get down to that level of polarization, it's really difficult for us to hold on to a crucial idea, which is that we live in a common reality. And so I think one of the things that can happen and has changed, while I was acknowledging to you that as human beings we're always prone to confirmation bias and to some extent always disagreeing, what has changed is the depth of the disagreement and how it's affected a certain value we need to connect with, which is the value of a common reality. I think that right now, because of what we might call knowledge polarization over what counts as facts and so forth, we tend to regard people who are not sharing our views as just sort of irrational. We cannot speak to them reasonably. We cannot exchange reasons. And that can lead to a very dangerous situation. Think of just what happened in the last couple days, yesterday, in fact, where people feel that reasons break down, and so only violence can solve the political problem.
And so we get a situation where you have somebody who, based on past Facebook posts, is very angry at the Republican Party and is the suspect in taking a rifle to members of Congress on the Republican side.
Exactly. And so I think it's vital to remember that we actually do share a common reality. We actually are we are living on the same planet. I mean, part of the problem is right now is that people can become cynical, as I said, as a political commentator noted not long ago, well, maybe there really are no facts anymore. And that's tempting. It can feel sort of like a bit of real politic or perhaps even liberating. Wow, we can each create our own truth. But that's a mistake. It's really more of it's a bit of self-deception, a bit of self-rationalization, sort of rationalizing away your biases. Increasingly, it seems like our whole culture is like the guy. Remember the Matrix, the movie The Matrix?
Oh, sure.
There was a guy in The Matrix who knew that he was living in the Matrix, but decided he liked it there anyway. He decided that he preferred the illusion, a life of illusion, to fact. As he sort of infamous quote from the movie, he says, "Ah, the steak, the wine, I know they're all fake, but they taste so good." Well, I think to a larger extent right now, we sort of, in some sense, we know that there are people with other views, that maybe we're holding onto our own views too closely. We're not opening ourselves up to reasoning with people with different views. But we find it more comforting to wrap ourselves in our cozy information bubble, to insulate ourselves with our social media and treat ourselves and our own views as a measure of reality. And that's bad faith towards the truth. And I think we need to try to overcome that both individually and culturally.
I guess if you want to improve the world, you have to live in the same world as the other people who want to improve it.
Exactly. And even though it's a simple idea, a lot of times the simple ideas are the ones we need to reconnect with, because the idea that we live in that common reality with each other is an idea that can seem as if, well, we look right past it. It's right there in front of our faces, and we forget why it's important.
Truth and the Internet and Society Today, the topics on the table here with Michael Patrick Lynch, a University of Connecticut philosophy professor. Here's a call from Dennis in Eugene. Welcome to The Exchange.
Hi. I totally disagree with this whole premise that the Internet is making us more biased or more, you know, all that. I just don't. I am an older person. I grew up at a time when there wasn't any internet, and I grew up in a small town, and I remember my parents, they had all their little biases, and they were Christian, and they didn't want to have anything to do with Catholics, and they didn't want to have anything to do with people of color, and they didn't want to have anything to do with people that were of a different sexual persuasion, and they only read the newspapers that were Democrat, or they only read the magazines that gave them the things that they wanted to hear. I think that this is totally human nature. I think that people now have an opportunity to be more informed than they ever have from the Internet. I've learned so many things off the Internet that I would have never been able to learn before. And I think that it's perfectly normal for people to want to reinforce the things they believe.
All right, as we said, confirmation bias. Let's get a response, Dennis. Thanks for that. Appreciate it. Michael Patrick Lynch, your thoughts?
Well, I agree with Dennis. As I just finished saying a moment ago, I think that this is it's human nature, as Dennis put it, to engage in confirmation bias. And we have tons of psychological research, not to mention anecdotal evidence like the sort Dennis remarked upon, to confirm that. So I think it's crucial to realize that, as he points out, that polarization is not a product of the Internet. That would be absurd to think that. The Internet and our way of using the Internet, not the Internet itself, just our ways of using our technology, has been speeding it up recently. There's other short forms of technology that might speed up polarization, but right now, the dominant way of accessing information that most of us have, the one that I certainly rely on the most, is the Internet. I feel 100% smarter when I have my smartphone around. So I think it's without a doubt the case that most of what we know nowadays, we Google now. We sort of, as I said, download prepackaged sets of facts for us and sort of shuffle them along the assembly line of social media. I do that along with everyone else. That's great. It allows me to not have to, as Dennis said, access all sorts of information. And moreover, I don't have to memorize that information. I can download the facts whenever I want them. But it's also the case that that leads us to sort of passive, unfortunately, often passive, and as I said, very personalized sort of experience with information. And what I'm suggesting is that we need to be careful about that and take some responsibility for how we manage our life online as well as offline.
Dennis's comments, too, jogged my memory just a bit, and I remember that, for example, the hijinks of Newt Gingrich back in his heyday, where his GOPAC advocated calling opponents sick and pathetic and traitors, predates the Internet.
Absolutely. And this sort of, you know, so this is a question that I think is, especially given what's happened yesterday, have things gotten worse? I think one of the things that I agree that, while it's been the case that the polarization has been bad for a long time, I'm with a lot of other people who think that there is, to some degree, something different about what's going on now. And as I emphasized, the difference really has to do with what we're polarized about. Polarization over values, that is, disagreement over values and deep disagreement over things like abortion, the death penalty, tax policy, for example, those are to be expected and indeed healthy in a democracy. Something's gone wrong in a democracy if people aren't disagreeing about basic values. On the other hand, Nowadays, what we disagree about extends all the way to, for example, to simple mathematical things. We would think, like, you know, how many people were at a certain crowd at a certain time, whether photographic evidence of an event is accurate or not, or whether certain facts about budget math, for example, questions about the age of the Earth, for example, were deeply polarized over those, and questions of climate change, whether the average temperature of the Earth has been changing or not. Those sorts of questions are factual questions, we used to think, and we used to agree at least in principle on how to answer them, even if we didn't always agree on the answers. That's not as clear that we do may have those agreements anymore. And it seems as if that sort of polarization, what I'm calling knowledge polarization, is different and is speeding up.
Michael Patrick Lynch is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, philosopher at the University of Connecticut, the director of the Humanities Institute there, leads UConn's Humility and Conviction in Public Life Project. He's got an April TED Talk with more than 500,000 views called How to See Past Your Own Perspective and Find Truth. You can join us on the Exchange as we discuss how to find truth. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. What you were just talking about, though, where we disagree on numbers, I mean, basically when you get to disagreeing about 2 plus 2 equals 4, you do indeed have a problem. You made a great point in the Stone blog in the New York Times in November that it used to be easier to rule out conspiracy theories like the moon landing was faked. Why is it so much harder now?
Well, for one thing, I mean, it used to be the case that we would say something like, with regard to like the moon landing is fake, we'd say to somebody who told us that, we'd say, well, if that was true, I would have heard about it by now. Right.
Yeah.
In other words, we would have heard about it. What we mean by that is, look, the major news sources that I encounter would have explained to me that that happened. It would have been big news, right, all across the planet. And it wasn't. So we doubt that person's claim. But nowadays, that sort of move has become much more suspect and difficult to make because, of course, people who, let's say, think about the case during the 2016 election where there was a conspiracy theory about child abuse going on by Democrats in a pizza parlor in D.C. Now, the thing is that lots of people, if you'd said to the people who believe in that conspiracy theory, well, if it was true, I would have heard about it by now. They would have said, well, you should have heard about it. It's been all over the news. And you'd say, well, what news? And they would point to sources that they have been consulting, like, you know, various
like Alex Jones at InfoWars.
So right, exactly. So in other words, they would feel as if it had been all over the news. And that shows you that our news sources have become, as I said at the top, highly personalized. Our experience has become highly personalized. And the sources of information that we get, that's what we're disagreeing about now, is whether those sources are accurate sources. And once I start questioning your sources, it's difficult for you to know even how to respond, because how are you going to defend that your sources are reliable without relying on, well, some sources, presumably the ones you find reliable? So it's very, very difficult for us to sort of find common ground. And that's why it's so important to remind ourselves that we better get working at trying to find that common ground, because if we don't reconnect with that value, we're going to lose a concept that is absolutely essential to democracy.
Michael, is any of this, can we ease our minds a little bit by thinking that some of this is just that we tend to move too fast? I mean, things can go live on the internet now, like they can go live on TV, and we've seen problems in the past with what happens with live reporting is you get things wrong.
Well, that is certainly the case, that as we speed up our ability to distribute and as well as consume information, we do always run the risk of greater error, because more data done at consumed at a faster rate and distributed at a faster rate gives everybody less time for evaluation. So that's certainly the case. That and there are researchers that are interested in figuring out how to slow down, in a certain sense, even a little bit, how we distribute information on the internet. And here I'm talking about even slowing down how, and certain platforms do this already, how comments are posted. If there's an edited commenting function, then they might give some time to go, they give a little time lapse before comments are posted, just partly to sort of take some of the emotion out of the discussion. One of the things that I might emphasize is that if people are interested in how we might go about addressing some of these problems, you should check out the website of Humility and Conviction at the project I'm leading at UConn.
I was going to ask about that, and we only have about 2 minutes left. I must have been a giggle a little bit about the conviction part, given the scandals and near scandals of late.
Right.
But what's the thumbnail sketch of the project?
So the thumbnail sketch of the project is to try to find a way of reconnecting with a more meaningful public discourse in our country. And the two main concepts of the project are the idea that you can't have a democracy without citizens having conviction. They're an apathetic electorate is no electorate at all. On the other hand, we also need our citizens in a democracy to be willing to listen and perhaps even learn from one another. That is, have some humility about their ideas. And one of the things we've done, for example, is we've assembled 10 different teams of researchers around the world. This is a very large project aimed at different levels of the problem. Each of these teams, which are interdisciplinary, are trying to apply research that has been done and is ongoing to problems like redesigning our digital platforms or figuring out what happens to the brain on dogma, as it were. When you're dogmatic, what literally happens to you physiologically? And also how to just understand the very concepts of open-mindedness and their history of those concepts and try to apply those insights to the very real problems that you and I have been talking about.
Well, it sounds like you're really taking it right down to a schematic.
That's the idea.
Okay. And that's the UConn Humility and Conviction in Public Life Project, UConn being the University of Connecticut. That's where Michael Patrick Lynch, the philosopher, directs the Humanities Institute and that project. Michael Patrick Lynch, always a pleasure to talk to you here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much for having me back.
Take it easy.